Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
May 20th, you see that we are going to be carefully opening up a number of facilities and reminding people of the facilities that were never closed. Hardware stores, landscaping, and the such. Daycare. They're not very occupied right now, but they were never closed. But more importantly, a lot of our Main Street businesses were allowing to be open starting May 20th, provided they follow strict social distancing rules that are out there now and will be even more clarified. And the way we're doing it, Tony, is we're going to restaurants. We're going to retail merchants. We're asking their associations, how do you recommend reopening in a way that is safe for your people as well as clients coming in? And they're coming up with very thoughtful ideas because the stores are more conscious than anybody about how important it is to make sure that consumers feel safe going back into the store.
Yeah, I think that is an important point. And Governor, actually, Tony and I were kind of just talking off the mic for a second before getting on with you. And I don't remember which one of us brought this up, Tony, but in comparison to other states, this may be too much to ask. But where do we kind of lie with unemployment? Because I heard in your press conference yesterday that about 60% of our economy stayed open, which I think is very good, at least from my perspective. That sounds like that's very good compared to other states. But as far as unemployment claims, you know, where does Connecticut kind of lie? Are we one of the higher state numbers per capita?
We are one of the higher states. Look, we're right between Boston and New York. New York was the Wuhan province of America when it came to ground zero for the pandemic. So, yeah, we did get hit pretty hard. And so we are very thoughtfully reopening. You probably know we got the best scientific minds in the state, as well as business folks with a special emphasis upon small business, trying to find the right balance. And I think we've got it.
We have a couple of listener questions. Scott asked about tattoo parlors. We didn't hear that mentioned for phase one of personal services. Any idea when that will open?
I think that will be in a later stage. It's close personal contact, tough to social distance, and I think that's going to have to wait a little bit.
Yeah, that actually kind of prompts a question that I had, Governor, which was when I think personal contact, I think of in the healthcare world, dentists and dermatologists. I mean, you couldn't get closer than that. What about them? I that just kind of came to me right now when I heard you say that.
Yeah, the dentists were never closed. We're always kept open for at least emergency procedures and non-routine cleanings. We haven't made a determination yet about what's going forward. I think you're going to find the clients themselves are probably going to be a little reluctant to go back into some of these type facilities where the contact is close. But one of the things we're waiting on, obviously, Melissa, is more testing. Make sure that we can test people coming in, at least have a fever test so they're not showing any symptoms on the way in. Make sure that masks are available to everybody. And I think that's when we can start opening up more of those type close contact situations.
Governor Ned Lamont is here. Now, Governor, I understand that outdoor seating at restaurants can open on May the 20th. But when you take into account the weather or the possible need for tents, does it make sense to even offer this? Or is this the mentality that anything is better than nothing?
First of all, you're 10 times more likely to be infected inside than outside. Mm. I know what's happening to our restaurant industry. It's been shut down completely. You're right, Tony. Even if I open it up on May 20th for outside dining, will people feel comfortable going back? And there'll be some warm days and there'll be some cold days. So we're not rushing back into this, but it seemed like one thoughtful way we can test the waters. And at the same time, we're able to look at places like Georgia, which opened up their restaurants a week ago, and we'll be able to get a better sense of what that does in terms of infection rates over the course of the next few weeks.
And I know earlier this week, a reporter had asked you about this, and then a day later, we actually had one of the parents behind this. I know, Governor, you heard about the virtual ceremony proposition that's been made by the CT grads group. Am I on the right page? Have you heard about this?
Absolutely, yeah.
What are your thoughts on it? Because we had one of the parents on yesterday, and she was great. She explained it very well, and I certainly am in support of doing something for the seniors. I guess the only thing that was my misunderstanding at first, and then it became clear on the air, which made me kind of question it a little bit, is it sounds like every school, you got 41,000 seniors across Connecticut, it sounds like every school is going to find a place, like whether that's a football field, whether that's a huge park, something like that. All the seniors are still going to be in that vicinity, and they're allowed up to 2 guests. Now, granted, there are some schools with bigger classes, some with smaller. What are your thoughts on this at this point? Because you're still talking about, I don't know, maybe 150, 200 people you're still talking about on a football field.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Melissa. We were talking to Miguel Cardona, our commissioner, about this yesterday. Obviously, our scientific group is going to weigh in. You know, as I said before, outside, 6 feet distance, obviously a much safer situation. Where are we going to be in late June or early July, whenever we try to do this? We'll have a better indication in the next couple of weeks. But I think it's not going to all happen for every high school on the same day, the same way. I think you're going to find different high schools trying to bring a sense of community and finality to the senior year. Many of them are talking about Zoom events. Many are talking about doing it later, say in July, not June. And I'll just have to wait for the scientific community to give me a little more indication whether we can do this in a safe way with masks.
Governor, we do have a couple of listener questions. Carol asks, as a Bridgeport area retail worker in my mid-60s, I do not feel safe going back to work on May the 1st, but will lose my unemployment if I stay home. Is the 70-plus age limit definite, or is this something that's being discussed by your advisors?
We're going to put out clear age guidelines next week, just to make sure that somebody, say, in their 60s, if they can't telecommute, how we can take care of them. Because unless you're absolutely essential, can be in a socially distanced environment in a safe way, back at the office, wherever you're going, you really shouldn't be going to the office at that age.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And as we kind of talk about unemployment a little bit, I'm going to skip over to Marie Louise. She said she and her coworkers were given a 20% pay cut when other people were furloughed. She wants to know if she qualifies for any unemployment because of that pay cut.
I don't believe with a pay cut you are eligible for the unemployment claims. I can tell you her, if it's a small business, they were eligible for the PPP loans, and that said if you kept people employed at their current salary, you get a forgivable loan. So I think we should look into that and see whether they got that loan. But not everybody did, as you know. They were oversubscribed.
All right. Kim writes that she works in a nursing home and is considered essential personnel. She says she was sick with COVID-19 but received a false negative when tested. She says her employer used her 3 weeks vacation to cover the time while she was out sick. So now she says she has no vacation time. She wants to know if there will be any funding for that scenario.
Well, look, the federal government said you paid 2 weeks sick leave for people who tested positive or people who even showed the symptoms. So there's absolutely no reason that she was, put into, self-quarantine and not getting paid, not by the nursing home. It shouldn't eat up her vacation time at all. I think that is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah, definitely. And the other thing I wanted to know about, Governor, is as we talk about, nursing home staff, even obviously healthcare workers, nurses, doctors, this week, actually, we had an orthopedic surgeon come on who performs his practices at St. Vincent's and Bridgeport Hospital. And then we had a doctor with Griffin Health come on as well. Both who know nothing about each other, have never crossed paths, said almost the exact same thing, which I found very alarming and I wanted to talk to you about. They both brought up PTSD. They both said that there is a good chance we're going to see a huge uptick in PTSD, maybe even addiction for healthcare workers. And I was just curious, do we have any, are we going to start discussing plans to either have resources to handle PTSD or any kind of addiction once this whole thing is over, if you will? Are we kind of planning on how do we take care of our healthcare workers mentally and emotionally?
That's a really good question. I mean, I can tell you that, first of all, 211, which is our emergency line, we have a lot of calls from people in emotional and distress. And we have hundreds of not-for-profit folks who are there answering questions, making sure that people know that they're being listened to. We got young people answering phones for young people calling in, not just the healthcare workers themselves. Healthcare workers, we certainly have the life insurance policy. We've got the daycare. We've got the masks and gowns. We've done everything we can to salute our frontline responders. We got combat pay for the folks, you know, in the nursing homes themselves. Further out in terms of PTSD, let us look at that. Let us see what the situation is.
One more question. When it comes to camping and hiking, we know state parks never shut down, but we are still monitoring those trails and parks for social distancing. Is there something that people should know?
They should know that it's really important that you maintain the social distancing, even in a remote park. They should know that we're being very strict about how many people can go to that park, and we're monitoring the parking lots. And my God, I think people need a little respite sometime from all the stress and nerves that this pandemic and self-isolating means. And a nice walk in the park is pretty valuable.
Yeah, you've got that right. Governor Lamont, you have been a rock star through this whole thing. We thank you for guiding us through this. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Tony, Melissa, thank you. Thanks, everybody.
We are very honored to have Fairfield's first select woman, Brenda Kupchick, joining us back on the air this morning. Brenda, how are you?
I'm good. Good morning. How are you?
Well, you know what? We're holding up, and we appreciate you giving us your time. We know you've been super busy, and a big announcement that came on Wednesday, which right ahead of the weekend. I know Tony's going to dive into that in a little bit. I wanted to start off with some numbers, though. I did see your newsletter, and I just wanted to get kind of your feedback. We know Fairfield has had more than 360 residents test positive for COVID-19 at this point. Unfortunately, we have lost 44 residents, but about half the people who did test positive, they have fully recovered, which is great news. In your personal opinion, how do you feel Fairfield has handled the pandemic? Would you have done things differently?
Well, I would say I just do want to update our numbers as of last night. We're up to 389 cases.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And sadly, 51 deaths.
Mm. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it seems like, you know, every minute that goes by, those numbers do go up. And I have to say, you know, select woman, that you kind of came in, you know, this is your first term in Fairfield, and then boom, the pandemic kind of came around. You know, certainly probably was not on your plate of things that you were planning for. Do you feel like you were prepared to take on Fairfield with everything going on?
Well, I don't think anybody even, whoever even has been in office a long period of time or in this position was prepared for a pandemic. It's not something I think they give you a playbook when you take office. But I think it's common sense, and you just try to listen to the professionals around you and your emergency management team and try to make the best decisions you know how. So we shut down things very early before any other of the towns around us, because of just the advice from my health director and emergency management team, and the way that the case rate was moving so quickly, and the number of people that were contracting it all around us, you know, sort of in Fairfield County area. I just felt back in March 16th, actually, that we should just shut down everything. And I mean, the governor had shut down certain things, but we wanted to shut down our beaches, our parks, playgrounds, all of that, way before any of the area towns did that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, we just thought it was the right thing to do, you know, based on the highly contagious nature of what we were being told, that if people were gathering at these areas, their exposure would be so much more great. So I did do that early, and I feel good about it, because a lot of people weren't too happy, but honestly, our numbers are lower than anyone else's in Fairfield County, so I feel like we did make a good decision there.
And all of that changes today as we are expecting a beautiful weekend, and things are going to start to ramp up again. Do you trust that residents will still practice social distancing, or do you anticipate shutting down public spaces again?
Well, we'll see, right? So people have been fairly cooperative. I think our community has stepped up and felt that their civic responsibility to each other was important. So I believe people will utilize our spaces, and we have put a lot of controls in place to make sure that people are safe, that they're able to access these spaces, and there will be enforcement there. So we'll have our law enforcement at these spaces, just to remind people, you know, if they get too close or if there is too many. So, for example, we spent quite a bit of time planning this. We didn't just decide it and then it's happening today. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of planning that went into it. And what some of the things we planned was reduced amount of people parking at one of our beaches. So, for example, Jennings and Penfield are close to one another. We're only allowing the Jennings parking lot to be open and at a reduced amount. So that way people can access both spaces, but it will be a reduced amount of people who can actually park. So we think that will keep down our numbers. We've also told people that we want them just to use, you know, for passive recreation, so walking or running. No games being played on the beach, no chairs, no coolers, nothing like that. So it wouldn't be an opportunity to gather so much, but just to utilize the space in a passive recreational way.
But first, select moment, just out of curiosity, with the beach community down there, just because I used to work actually at the Inn at Fairfield Beach years and years and years ago, and I know that community, it's very fun, and obviously colleges, they've already been sent home, so that's a good thing, but it's still a pretty hopping beach community, if you will. You know, I know that we're limiting parking, obviously, in the parking spaces there, but how do you make sure that, you know, if people are having, you know, 5-6 cars of people being dropped off just at homes, you know, or people being dropped off, you know, being there, you know, do we have police that will be kind of looking at that area, especially, you know, with this weekend, finally things are opening up, even if parking is being handled on the, like, for the public side of things, privately, how do you kind of manage, you know, that people aren't using private residences to just be able to still use the beaches, if that makes sense?
No, I understand what you're saying. And so we did think about that. We already have quite a bit of no parking signs in and around the beach area because of people who were trying to get on the beach without paying for a beach sticker. So we have a fair amount of that, but they're going to be patrolling to make sure that people aren't parking in no parking signed areas. But obviously you can't control if people are going to other people's homes, right?
Sure.
So for example, you know, the CDC says to us to not interact with people outside of your household. So we're hoping that our residents, and for the most part our residents have stepped up and done that. They're just being at home with their own families or people in their own household. So we're hoping that people will continue to do that. But obviously if we get reports that there's large gatherings at specific homes, the law enforcement has gone out and reminded people of the rules and that the exposure rate is so much higher when you do that, when you gather together in large groups. So we're going to be watching. It's a test case, right? So we have restricted our beaches and our Lake Mohegan area, which are typically open to out-of-town residents, to just Fairfield residents during this time period because of the state of emergency that I declared back in March. So we have that capability to do that. So hopefully it'll be a nice respite for the members of our community to go walk on the beach, walk through the trails, and then just go home. And then more people will come and we'll kind of have a reduced flow of activity, hoping that's the way it is. We actually put a chart up on our Fairfield Park and Rec page where you can actually check to see if the parking lot is full because we're only allowing a certain amount of cars in to the Fairfield Jennings Beach parking lot.
And first, select woman, what's the latest on the playgrounds in Fairfield?
So playgrounds are still closed. Obviously, playgrounds are structures where we don't want to have that exposure. So if you touch a playground, if you're on a slide or a swing, you know, now you're leaving. We don't have the capacity to have, you know, people to go out and clean regularly our playground equipment. So we're not opening our playgrounds.
First select woman, Brenda Kupchick from Fairfield, we thank you so much for taking the time. It sounds like you've got it under control. And hopefully we can talk to you again and get a little bit more of an update on Fairfield. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
We always check in with Congressman Jim Himes, and he is here this morning.
Good morning, Tony.
I hope everything's well with you and your family in these days.
We are safe, fortunately. Thank you for asking. Yeah, it's as safe as you can be cooped up in a house with two teenage girls. You know, it's an experience, but thank God we're safe. Yeah,
that's all that really matters. Congressman, it looks like the Connecticut delegation is calling for federal intervention for nursing homes. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so, you know, as we have sadly experienced so intensely here in the state of Connecticut, it really is our nursing homes that are at the very center of the bad outcomes associated with COVID-19. You know, some substantial portion, I think, you know, maybe almost 40% of the fatalities that we've had to sustain here in the state of Connecticut have been inside nursing homes. And no surprise, right? You've got, in nursing homes, you typically have a very vulnerable population, our elderly people, oftentimes with other chronic diseases. And of course, that's right in the target of who has the worst outcomes with this thing. So, you know, it really is time for the federal government, the CDC, other organizations to not only study what happened and what happens inside nursing homes. Because remember, I mean, people are in nursing homes for a reason, right? They need that kind of close-in care. They need people taking care of them. And then to come up with a set of guidelines and a set of recommendations that will allow us to, you know, have more confidence that our senior citizens that are in these nursing homes are well cared for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that we're addressing this, Congressman, because they just released the data late yesterday, and I don't know if it's come across your desk yet, but it also included assisted living homes, which we haven't even seen those at this point. Nursing homes at this point have accounted for 55% of the COVID-19 deaths in Connecticut, which is, you know, obviously more than half, which is incredible. We've had 950 deaths, 4,800 infected, and honestly, the majority of these homes, 150 out of the 216 in Connecticut have been impacted. And now we're hearing about 54 facilities that are assisted living. Will this include also addressing assisted living facilities as well?
Yeah, I would think so. You know, assisted living facilities have many of the same issues that a nursing home has. You know, they may have people who are less severely impacted by other health issues. You know, assisted living is a different environment than nursing homes. But if you think about what we're talking about here, you're sort of, you know, you don't need to be a PhD epidemiologist to know that when you have people who are almost by definition suffering from other medical conditions and they're concentrated. I mean, you know, you visit a nursing home and got people in a very concentrated environment. And then, you know, nursing homes have large staffs because these folks need need care. And so, you know, people are coming in and out of that facility. And no matter how careful you are, and of course, people are being careful, you know, people are using masks, they're, you know, washing their hands, doing all the things we know they need to do. Nonetheless, in many instances, you've got dozens or hundreds of people going in and out of those facilities. And so, yeah, there's just got to be a, you know, we need some specific guidance, some specific recommendations on how to minimize what has been, as you point out, Melissa, just an awful set of outcomes associated with nursing homes.
We're speaking with Congressman Jim Himes. Sir, we saw the House of Representatives will not be back in session as planned for next week. On News 12, it didn't seem like you were in agreement with the decision. What should have happened?
Well, you know, to be clear, you know, there's 435 representatives, some of whom are elderly, and so I understand the health concerns. But no, my point of view is, you know, I'd say two things about that. Number one, it's really hard for us to do our legislative job when we're not all together in a position to kind of consult with each other, to debate, to, you know, to hold hearings and that sort of thing. You know, it's almost impossible. And but the second thing I feel is that, you know, we're asking an awful lot of other people, whether it's our military or our, you know, FBI or the, you know, CDC, the census workers, Social Security, to be at their posts. And so I think we should be too. Now, you know, I do want that done safely, obviously. And as we demonstrated last week, there are ways to do that. We when we were all in the Capitol last week, we were almost all wearing masks. And, you know, instead of putting 435 people on the floor of the House of Representatives to vote, they sort of cycled us in, you know, 20 at a time or so. So I do think there are safe ways to do it. But the medical professionals felt we weren't quite there yet. So what I'm hearing now is that we're likely to be back, not this coming Monday, but the Monday after, Monday, the 11th of May.
Okay. Yeah, good update this morning. Thank you. And also, we have another, if we do have another stimulus package, I don't know if that's even in the cards, but I figured I'd ask this question. Maybe this isn't even part of the stimulus package, but will we ever be investing, Congressman, in resources to handle PTSD? I ask that because we have had recently a lot of healthcare officials on our show, but this week specifically, we had two major doctors come on, and they both said identically the same thing, different hospitals, but that they're very concerned. And frontline workers, nurses, doctors, when this is all over, they're going to struggle significantly with PTSD. And I'm wondering if we've made a priority to avoid something like we saw with the ER doctor in Manhattan who lost her life earlier this week to suicide.
Yeah, that was just a devastating case. The answer is obviously we have to. It's not just our frontline workers. The healthcare workers are probably the ones who are experiencing the most intense psychological trauma. But an awful lot of our first responders are working, double shifts, are dealing with very, very highly stressed people. And even folks, I'm going to try to pull together a bunch of experts on mental health next week, because of course what we're all going through right now is a deeply unnatural thing. Being cooped up, very little contact with our fellow human beings, with our friends, it's a deeply unnatural thing, and of course it's going to be effective pretty dramatically worsening pre-existing mental health issues for a lot of people out there. So yes, I don't know what shape it's going to take, Melissa, but that's obviously going to be something that's going to have echoes well down the road, and we're going to need to make sure that the medical professionals and others are really prepared to deal with it.
And Congressman Himes, any information on more testing coming to Connecticut? We still have a lot of people who just want to know if they ever had the virus but can't get tested to donate plasma. What can you say about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a good news story there. It's a slow good news story, but a good news story. I mean, compared to where we were 5 weeks ago, where we really had almost no testing whatsoever, we're in a much better position. So, we are getting thousands of tests done a week now in the state of Connecticut. And, I see it in places like Stanford and Norwalk, where hospitals are getting access to the, Abbott 15-minute test, there are now mobile testing centers. And what we're starting to see is that whereas 3 weeks ago you could only get a test with a doctor's order, now we're starting to move into a world where people can get tests if they feel like they need one. We're still, by the way, not nearly where we need to be. And most medical professionals are telling us that if we really want to reopen safely, we're going to need to take the country from about 1 million tests a week, which is where we are today, to more like 10 million tests a week. So we're moving in the right direction, but it's slow. And people will see this. Now, Tony, you're referring to something, the serological test, where you can go and see if you had the disease. Looks for antibodies in your blood.
Right.
That's going to be a really important part of reopening. But that test is because it's a blood test, that's a little less available than the swab test, which determines if you have it today. But yes, in the coming weeks, you're going to see more and more capacity to test for both of those things in the state of Connecticut.
Congressman Himes, thank you so much for taking a few moments. So we know you're a busy guy, but hopefully we'll talk to you again on Friday.
Thanks so much, Tony. Take care, Melissa.